Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. I'm Caleb Meese, one of the policy officers at the Council of Deans of Health, and I'm joined today by Christy Deaton, who is a professor of nursing at the University of Cambridge. We're here today for a special podcast as part of the Council's 2022 Research Month. Today, we'll be talking about developing research capacity among nurses, midwives, and the allied health professionals. With that, I'll ask our first question and hand it over to Christy. So, Christy, what is the current state of play with research capacity development in 2021 and 2022?
Okay, thank you, Caleb, and I'm really delighted to be here. Sometimes we use the analogy of the story about the curate's egg being good in parts to talk about something that is good, has both good and bad parts. And I think that's true of where we are with things. There's certainly things that are very positive, and there are areas that we need to improve. I would say on the positive side that we have more awareness and more recognition. There's certainly been over the past decade and a half, more drive to build research capacity and capability, more opportunities as we can talk about. There's certainly organizations that are taking the lead in supporting what I'll call NMAP, but nurse midwifery and allied health professional research. So work that we're doing at Cambridge, so Nottingham, Barts, Manchester, many other organizations that are really, really pushing this forward. We're talking prior to the Chief Nurse of England's research strategy that she's going to be presenting, but it's about supporting, developing, and embedding research. And that's going to be a really important document for us. And we do have the support kind of nationally. Certainly NIHR and Health Education England have been great partners in trying to help us move this forward. So we are building a cohort of more doctorally prepared nurses, midwives, and AHPs, but of course, it's still a very small part of the workforce. But if you think about it, in 2009, the NIHR started a particular fellowship scheme for NMAPs, that's kind of an expanded list, so it includes pharmacists, healthcare scientists, clinical psychologists, and so forth. So we haven't really had this focus for that long, and that followed on the back of some reports from the early 2000s about the importance of building research capacity. But I think that the areas where we are more challenged are in a number of places, and one is the infrastructure that we have to support research from very early career, even our undergraduate education, all the way to supporting people to become senior investigators who have robust programs of research. There's also a challenge within the NHS, the culture that we have that actually values research, that makes time for it, that sees it as an activity that adds to what we're doing in clinical practice, improving care, making it safer, higher quality, getting better outcomes, and more efficient, and all of those things that it can do, rather than saying, well, we can't possibly take the time out of clinical practice for this. And of course, in many ways, that's understandable because the NHS is usually under high clinical demand and struggles sometimes with resources, staffing, and so forth. And the past 18 months have been horrendous, and we're still under incredible pressure. So it is understandable that much research has been disrupted in the past year if it wasn't related to COVID. But at the same time, there's really been an emphasis on the importance of research, and not just the pharmacological research, but other issues around proning patients and the issues of communication and end-of-life care as we have worked through this pandemic, and how we support staff to then support patients and families. We know that research active trusts have better outcomes, and that doesn't just refer to medical research. We want to have that culture where research is embraced and really used to help us improve care. Part of that infrastructure is, as we are preparing people to be researchers, what are the posts that they have in the NHS? So the clinical academic posts, there's still a lot of challenge around that, and maybe we can get into that a bit more. So the infrastructure, I would say, all across the continuum, how we support and move research forward are areas that we certainly need to improve.
Thanks, Christy. I think that that's the same sort of takeaway that the council's having at the moment, where the conversation has started to shift, but it's definitely about building that sort of infrastructure long-term that still needs quite a bit of work.
Yes.
I
think there's a number of, there's a lot of guidance that's out there, more guides that have been written, but we know we still have a lot of work to do. I will say one thing about senior researchers. There was a report done by the MRC in 2017 that looked at fellowships across all different levels. So, and against from different funders, so NIHR as well as charities. And while you could see the shift from 2009 to 2017 in sort of doctoral level fellowships, it really fell off at the more senior levels. So that moving people into postdoctoral fellowships, advanced fellowships. So for example, in 2017, there weren't any nurses or midwives who had senior academic fellowships through any of these fellowship schemes, and only a handful of allied health professionals who did. So we know that there's, kind of keeping that research development going is going to be important for the long term.
Thanks, Christy. And I think that moves us quite smoothly over into the next question, which is what opportunities are available for research capacity building?
Yes, so I mentioned, that in 2009, NIHR developed their, what is now called the Integrated Clinical Academic Fellowship Program. So that is specifically for nurses, midwives, and allied health professionals. And it moves from pre-doctoral clinical academic fellowships. There are about 40 of those that are funded in England. So most of what I'm talking about is in England, and there's different schemes in the other devolved nations, and to some extent they've bought into some of the NIHR opportunities. So the ICA Integrated Clinical Academic Pathway moves from pre-doctoral to more senior level awards. And they're also, of course, nurses and midwives, allied health professionals can apply for any of the for the NIHR fellowship schemes that are open to anyone doing health and social care research. And that has, and that's, a, it's similar, but slightly different and maybe a bit more flexible for some people. We've also seen in the, this year that Wellcome Trust has funded a number of PhD programs. They're usually collaborations between universities or among two or more universities. We have a collaboration at Cambridge with University of East Anglia. And this is open to all healthcare professionals, whereas previously it was only open to medical, veterinary, and dental students. So now it's open to all. So that's another opportunity. We're seeing more charities that are offering fellowships, some specifically for NMAPS, so British Heart Foundation versus Arthritis, Dunhill Medical Trust. There are a number of them. And you can always look at the Association of Medical Research Charities to find out who does what. And then in between that, Health Education England has initiated programs in a number of regions. We have one in the east of England that is about getting helping people get ready to put in these applications. So these are nationally competitive applications, and it takes time and support for someone who's new to research to put in a competitive doctoral fellowship. So HEE, in most of the regions, I believe in England, fund internships. These are at an early career stage. So people who are maybe pre-masters or have done a clinical master's that didn't have a lot of research training in it can do this internship. They do in East of England, we do a research a module, a university module on research methods. They have a certain amount of backfill for clinical time, and they have a certain amount of classes. And then we also do pre-doctoral fellowship applications. So they're really designed to buy out some time to give people that support with master classes to help them get that application in. And we also do the same with postdoctoral fellowships. And then many organizations like Cambridge also, we offer internal, what we call pump priming or pre-doctoral and post-doctoral fellowship applications. So there are these opportunities, and I think they are increasing, and there's more interest in, I think, making these broadly toward all healthcare professionals, recognizing the value of having everyone engaged in research.
So you spoke about kind of the different stages of the healthcare professionals' research in early career and mid-career. I'm wondering what the opportunities are even earlier for sort of pre-registration students. Obviously, it's very important to get students involved in research as early as possible, as it'll increase the likelihood that they'll continue to do that later in their career. Are there good opportunities for students as well?
Probably an area that needs a good bit of attention. I think we need to think about how we teach research in our universities. So pre-registration students getting exposure to not just medical research or the work of those that are participating in research, contributing to it, but they also need exposure, I believe, to doctoral fellows and to those that are new clinical academics, because they'll be closer to them and they can see how the research questions come out of their clinical practice and start to produce that evidence for practice. So I think I think universities, we really need to focus on how we get people excited about research, emphasize that it is important. It's a professional obligation to practice according to the best evidence, but you need skills and knowledge to be able to do that. And are we getting people excited about it and not just talking about the mechanics or the tools, the methods that we use for research, but really why it's important? We want to excite people, and then they can learn some of those methods and work through that. So I think we can do more with that. And maybe there are, and I know there's a lot of pressure that people need the clinical practice, but we probably need some placements that are maybe with research teams. So nurse or AHP-led research teams, so that they're actually seeing and being part of that team and understanding what goes on as part of that research, because it's about their practice.
Perfect. Thanks, Christy. And I know this is a position that the council agrees with and keeps pressing for. So hopefully yes, there's further developments soon. For this next question, we've touched on it a little bit, but just to ask it more directly, what are the challenges and barriers to research capacity and capability development?
Yes, I suppose it's the biggest issue to talk about in how we overcome those barriers as well. So I think it starts with making sure that we talk about research, we get people excited about research at undergraduate level. They have opportunities in their clinical placements to actually see how research goes on in clinical settings. And then the what we've talked about already around the culture of the NHS and ensuring that, you know, maybe they get really excited about research as an undergraduate, but get into practice where they're in a ward where it's not valued. So it's about making sure that all through an organization that there is value for research activities, for continuing to learn in that way, for what research brings to practice. And I think that as we hopefully develop clinical academic posts, that these will be people that can help to change the culture of a ward, help to get, you know, the newly qualified nurses engaged with research. So again, it's about that culture, it's about that infrastructure. So to talk a little bit about clinical academic posts, I mean, it's not been a tradition in nursing and allied health professions that we've had the kind of posts that were part research, part clinical, in the way that, say, many medical consultants would have those roles. So there's issues around how, you know, what are those roles? How do we fund them? You know, how do we move that forward? And we've created a framework at Cambridge University Hospitals around what what we want these, what we think these roles are. And we are saying that they need to be 50% research, 50% clinical. And the reason for that is that as people are newly into their research careers, it takes time and support to further develop so that they can get an advanced fellowship, or they can get a grant, or they can start to build their program of research. So we're looking at different models of how we can fund that. There's, you know, kind of a traditional model would be 50% university, 50% clinical, but we don't have that. We don't have very many of those posts. So the challenge for us is to make it something that both sides see as a value to their organization, and that we create more of these posts, especially at a time when, as we've said, the NHS is really struggling with shortages of resource and staff, and we're under tremendous clinical pressure, but it's about valuing those roles. So our challenges are around how we build that infrastructure across every level, how we support people to, once they've gotten a PhD, I mean, we're seeing probably just through the ICA program, there's probably 20 to 25 doctoral fellowships that are provided each year. That's been over the past 5 years, but we're seeing fewer of the, as we've said, the more advanced fellowships, the clinical lectureships or postdoctoral awards. And we're also working with Health Education England around developing clinical lecturer posts, which again is based on the medical model, about 50% clinical, 50% research, again, to take people who are want to develop their research careers so that they have the time and the support to do that. So it's about support. The biggest challenge is how do we support research in a high demand, resource constrained environment, both universities and the NHS, to continue to build the support and the development of people who want to be research active, and saying that research is part of every, is part of everybody's practice, whether it's, whether they become an investigator or not, we need to value that research. So the biggest challenge for us is about infrastructure and about really truly valuing research and seeing it as part of everybody's clinical practice.
Thanks, Christy. You spoke somewhat about the success and the efforts that are going on in Cambridge in particular. I'm wondering if you have ideas about methods to expand that to different HEIs and regions of the UK. Is it about just duplicating those efforts, or is it very regional specific? Wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot written about different models that we can use, and I don't think there's any one model. I think that the reason we created a framework is because we recognize, for clinical academic posts, is because we recognize that we needed kind of a skeletal structure in a way to say this is what we would, you know, some of our expectations and the criteria and how we would organize these. But then they're going to be slightly different in different areas because it's going to be based on their clinical need and research interest and collaborations that the individual has. So in the same way, I think that as we develop and different organizations have developed different roles, so Nottingham, Barts, Manchester, organizations I've said before, may have slightly different models. And I think we need to put those out there and say, these are ways we can do it. This is how we made it happen. There are already some guides out there and people have written about this, but it's about saying that in general, there's a structure or framework of what we think of these clinical academic posts. So we think they ought to be 50% research so that people have the time to develop their roles. We're looking at more than one way to fund these. So it might be a university and NHS partnership. So they're 50-50. And we need to make sure that we've got policies that make that really possible to happen. or there may be different ways that you want to fund that 50% research side of it. So I think it's about finding what works for your organization within an overall structure that says these posts are important and we need to have them. We've looked at a lot of job descriptions. So there are a number of job descriptions out there and people that are working on these. So I don't think there's any one model that we should use, but it's about saying that it is important and that overall we have kind of a framework perhaps or a structure of how we want to see these clinical academic posts. And that's part of it. Overall, and then I think that they become part of helping us to build that infrastructure. Exciting undergraduates and exciting band 5 and band 6 nurses around research because they're going to be the ones that are closest to research, closest to their clinical practice. And then how we continue to support the people, both universities and NHS, how we continue to support people to become senior researchers with robust programs of research that then will have a real impact on our clinical practice and on patient care. I'm not sure I answered your question on that. So, ask it again.
No, very, very valuable input. Again, we can take it whatever direction works best or you're comfortable talking about. Right. Thanks, Christy. For our last question of the day, I'd like to ask, what strategies can we use to build research capacity and capability among NMAPs? And to that, I'd like to add, what can the council and other stakeholders best do to support and drive strategies for capacity development?
And I know this is important to the council and that they are doing quite a bit of work. There are also other organizations. I believe you're going to be talking to the Clinical Academic Research Implementation Network, which is really looking at how we implement these posts. So that's fantastic. I think that we need to think about how best we partner between universities and NHS trusts and how we can develop that infrastructure, if you like, around joint posts. So we don't have that many, particularly at senior levels. So we would want them perhaps at all different levels. Having more conversations about research priorities, making it easier for people to be in universities to work with trusts and work with staff and get access to honorary research contracts and things like that. There's oftentimes a lot of administrative barriers that come up, and I think we need to work on those and to solve that. One of the things that I think is really important too, as we're developing focusing on research capacity and capability, is how we support managers. So if you think about a line manager, they're really caught between a rock and a hard place because they're having to deliver the clinical service and the operational pressures are very high. So how do we help them to think more long-term, to think about how they can support research when they're just, they're kind of dealing with kind of the day-to-day operational pressures. So, and they may not be research active themselves. And so particularly when people come back with new skills, whether it's from a master's or a doctoral program, how can we help them to support that person, but also to use their skills in different ways to improve care on the wards. So there's no one thing, but again, it goes back to what we've talked about consistently, which is around infrastructure and supporting research capacity across every level. So with the council, I know that it's a priority. So thinking about the partnerships we can have between university and NHS Trust, how do we make that really easy to happen and that kind of movement for people to go across? Supporting young researchers is part of what universities are doing, of course, but then looking at, okay, well, how do we do that? And if they're going back to clinical practice and it's not a clinical academic role, how do we stay in touch and help them to negotiate or maybe to develop those roles? So both universities and the NIH Trust need to work together to look at how we can develop the senior researchers of the future. I wish I had an easy answer for that, but I think people are aware of the barriers, and sometimes they're just administrative, and surely there's things that we can do to help resolve that, to look at how flexible our HR policies can be, and how we can have structures set up to make it easy to move between the NHS and HEIs.
Thanks, Christy. I think your line, "there's no easy answers," maybe sums up a lot more than we'd like it to. But anyway, with that, I'd like to end this podcast and thank Christy for joining me to talk about research capacity today. I hope you all have enjoyed listening, and please continue to engage with the rest of the research month. Thank you very much.
Thank you.